So, welcome to another edition of the Fertility Answers podcast. I'm your host, Neil Chappell. This week, talking to Caitlin about options for same-sex couples and building their family. Caitlin and I worked together to grow her family with her wife, Alana, and it was a lot of fun, but I really got to learn a lot about Caitlin, and I wanted to have her on because of her experience and her journey and the decisions that they made as a couple, but also because Caitlin's got a really helpful science background. And so I told her before, I really like how she thinks and I like how she makes decisions. And I think that her flow diagram and her brain may help folks kind of map out their decisions in the future. And that's kind of what this is all about. So Caitlin, thanks for your time and welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Bird's eye view, I wanted to kind of touch on different options for how to build your family as a same-sex couple, specifically looking at either options of like donor inseminations or sperm inseminations or IVF. Those are kind of like the two broad categories, but we can get into a little bit more of the details there. Tell me a little bit about how you guys decided to do what y'all did as far as whether or not y'all started with donor inseminations or IVF.
Yeah, so in the beginning, I guess we were trying to go as minimally invasive as possible. So use as little medical help as needed. That quickly changed, but so we did decide that we wanted to do to go through a sperm bank to get donor sperm. And there was some debate about whether we should try it home first. However, using frozen sperm, you know, my research didn't seem to lead me in the direction that was a good idea, simply because sperm is, you know, quite expensive, and the window of time that frozen sperm stays alive seems to be quite small. So we didn't want to risk starting that way. So we reached out to you and got started that way, and we decided to go with IUI first, just to kind of see how that did, and if that was the answer, then great. I had no intention on moving to IVF until the IUIs did not work for us. And so we started off with, I don't think we did any medication our first IUI. We wanted to go as natural as possible. I believe you did convince me to do the trigger shot just to ensure that, you know, ovulation was happening and to time it a little bit better. So we did three rounds of IUI before deciding to move to IVF. And I don't know if you want to take over and discuss, you know, why that's a good time.
Yeah, you actually covered a lot of ground there. So let's talk about, I've never had anybody talk about the difference between home inseminations and doing inseminations monitored with a, you know, inside a practice. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Most of the time, you know, I don't see the folks that do home inseminations. I see folks after they've tried 6 or 8 or 12 home inseminations. And that always breaks my heart because, man, yeah, sperm is expensive. But let's talk a little bit about home inseminations versus IUIs in the office. Basically, intravaginal or intracervical inseminations are not going to be as effective as intrauterine inseminations. I just don't love home inseminations because it's just less effective. It may be in some areas cost prohibitive to do intrauterine inseminations. I don't know that that's necessarily the case here in Louisiana. Our prices are pretty low, but that may be something to consider depending on what area you're in. I would say that you bring up a good point of keeping the sperm healthy and happy until you're using it is a good point. So we have, you know, your fertility clinic is going to have monitored cryo tanks and everything that make sure that the sperm are kept and stored and then thawed all appropriately to give you the best bang for your buck there. So that's another good point that folks that do home inseminations don't talk to me a lot about. The other thing that I think is reasonable to touch on is picking sperm. So you guys just decided out the gate to go with a sperm bank as opposed to a known donor. Do you want to talk about how y'all made that decision?
Yeah, so we did have some discussion about that. Obviously, because of cost in the beginning. In the beginning, we weren't really considering many of the ethical dilemmas with using a known donor, or not ethical necessarily, but I guess more legal. In the end, we ended up just feeling more comfortable with a sperm bank, really because the laws, especially in Louisiana, it's just really difficult to really ensure that the known donor can sign away rights and, you know, that our family would be complete the way that we wanted it to be with using a known donor. So that's why we went with a sperm bank.
I think it's perfect. I would say almost half, if not even more than half, of the couples that come see me and talk about donor insemination, they come saying, hey, we already have a sperm donor that we know that we want to use. And my reply is always the same. It's like, that's great. That's fine. If that's what you want to go with, let's talk about what that looks like. There are restrictions and regulations in place, not only from a legal perspective, but also by the FDA, et cetera, that if you want to use a known sperm donor, what you need to do is bank the sperm, test HIV and hepatitis and all those things, quarantine the sperm for 6 months, and then retest the donor for HIV, hepatitis, and all those things. And then you want to also make sure you've, like you said, have your legal contract in place to protect your parental rights and that of your wife. And then once you've done all that, then you can use a known sperm donor. The second I tell folks that, I would say 99% of the time, they're like, never mind, we're just going to go to the sperm bank. And the sperm bank has already done all that quarantining, and they already have all those rules and regulations kind of taken care of. So you can just get the sperm donor that you want, and you're off to the races. So I do think, you know, after the contracts and the labs and the quarantining and stuff, I don't know that the cost is too much different. So I'd say most folks go with an anonymous donor through a sperm bank. There are three things that I tell folks about the anonymous donors through sperm banks that I just think it's reasonable to mention. Number one, you want to know your carrier screen. And if you want to know more about carrier screens, we have a podcast on that done previously, but you want to make sure your carrier screen does not match the donor. You want to make sure your CMV status doesn't match the donor. Your CMV is cytomegalovirus. You want to make sure that if you're immune to cytomegalovirus, it doesn't matter if the donor is CMV positive or CMV negative because you're immune. But if you're CMV negative, you want to pick a CMV negative donor. So there's no risk of passing on CMV through the sperm to the pregnancy. And then lastly, the type. I feel like ordering donor sperm is alphabet soup. There's ART and ICI and IVF and IUI. There's washed and pre-washed and unwashed and all these different kinds of vials you can buy. Rely on your team, your embryologist, your andrologist, and your reproductive endocrinologist to kind of help guide you as to what type of vial you're looking for whatever treatment you're going through. Moving on from sperm, anything to add there, Caitlin? Any other factors that you guys use in making the decision of which bank to use or which donor to use that would be helpful?
Not necessarily that I know of. You know, it's a very interesting process to choose a sperm donor. I will say, we just went with one of the most widely known banks, and and I was CMV negative, like you said, so we ended up narrowing our choices pretty significantly.
That's what I tell folks is like between these three things, you're going to narrow your choices down. So pick your favorite bank, pour yourself a glass of wine, and then just go shopping and just kind of have an evening of fun with it, you know, with your significant other and as you kind of pick where you're going. So you've got your sperm and you guys chose to do inseminations, and you know, you brought up a good point. You want to go as natural as possible. And I would say, you know, that I champion that because many folks that come to clinic in a kind of a same sex or a trans or what have you kind of couple, they're not infertile. And so you really don't want to do a whole bunch. I don't want to jump to IVF in someone that has that story. And so I do like the idea of keeping things as natural as possible. I do like the idea of trying inseminations first. It's reasonable to pause here for a second because there was just a study that came out a couple of months ago that looked at whether or not it made sense to do medicated insemination therapy for couples that are same sex. You know, punchline is, folks that have a medicated cycle are a little bit more likely to get pregnant, a few percentage points more likely to get pregnant per month, but the twin rate is higher, which is not surprising because if you're using medication, you're pushing on the system a little harder, and so you do increase the risk for twins. The conclusion of that paper was don't medicate same-sex couples because all you're doing is increasing the twin rate. I don't know that I interpreted that paper the same way. What that interpreted to me is, if you're going to medicate a same-sex couple, pay attention. And if that couple does show, you know, two or three or four follicles and they're in their 20s and they're healthy and they have no other risk factors or whatever, then you might want to consider canceling that cycle because they're clearly at a risk for multiples. What I like to do is exactly what you said. See how you respond in a natural cycle and see if everything behaves. And if everything behaves, it's fine to try a natural cycle or two. But I also want to help people get pregnant as fast and as efficiently as possible, save you money. So we tried a natural cycle. The response was okay. And then we kind of came at it a little bit harder because the final point here is that just because you shouldn't be infertile does not mean that you aren't. Infertility or subfertility affects 15% of couples regardless of how they define couple. And so I have that conversation with anybody that comes in and they'll say, hey, you know, we're not infertile. We're just, you know, we're a same-sex couple. And I say, well, I don't know that because there's a 1 in 8 chance that you actually are. So to your point, trying 3 IUIs is the correct way to go to try and see if we can get a pregnancy simple, fast, and easy. And it works the majority of the time, but sometimes it doesn't. And you need to look at something like IVF or surgery or whatever in your story. And y'all's story, it made sense to kind of move towards IVF. Would you want to talk a little bit about decisions regarding IVF versus reciprocal IVF? Did y'all talk about reciprocal IVF? Are you familiar at all with the concept of reciprocal IVF?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely discussed the idea. Honestly, my wife just really wasn't that interested. And, you know, I have always been the one who, in our relationship, who would want to carry out children. So she didn't really seem to have too much interest in, you know, getting her eggs and doing the reciprocal IVF thing. Otherwise, we definitely, you know, probably would have went that route. I think it's very interesting.
It is a lot of fun. My favorite question to ask when I walk into a consult with a new couple is whose eggs and whose uterus? Because there's just so many options and opportunities. And it's just a lot of fun to kind of think about, hey, we could do it this way, we could do it that way. I love that conversation. But you're right, everybody feels different. That, you know, some folks are like, no way in Hades am I participating in this scenario at all, except I'm going to be one heck of a support person. And that's totally cool. But some people are pretty adamant it's going to be my eggs and her uterus. And that's just the way it's going to be. And, you know, I'm old enough now to where we've done reciprocal IVF one way, and then we flip flop for baby number two. And that's a lot of fun too. Those are a lot of the high points that I actually wanted to touch. You and I both talk faster than I thought. I guess I'm going to open it up a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the, what were some of the things that were more challenging or more difficult, or like some of the things that you guys had difficulty with making decisions or took a little bit longer to decide on?
I'd say IVF was a tough decision, and it was really because in the beginning, you know, we never intended on going that far with fertility treatment. Mm-hmm. But as we went along, you know, the idea of having children just continued to get stronger. So we kind of went with, you know, whatever we have to do is what we have to do. And it, I would say that one of the things that was really, I thought was going to be prohibitive of us going the IVF route was cost. And I will say that in my experience, I think that is what prohibits many, many same-sex couples from going that route. And yeah. I was very, very lucky in that I had insurance coverage. So if we didn't have the insurance coverage, I don't think that, you know, we would have our son today. So I think that's an important thing to bring up. I know cost is, you know, it's kind of a taboo thing to talk about in healthcare sometimes, but definitely I know lots of couples who also say that after the entire experience that they sometimes wish they would have gone with IVF first. And you probably hear that a lot. I would say that I don't disagree with that in some ways, but I also am happy that, you know, we went the route that we did. And the way that I think that you would recommend people begin is, you know, start slow and because it does work a lot of the time.
Yeah, just see if it's easy. And you know, you don't want to take somebody through IVF and make 15 embryos because they actually are like the most fertile person in the world. Just, you know, so that's kind of how I feel. Insurance can be a major prohibitive factor, but I think it's just because most insurance companies still think it's 1921 and not 2021. I guess I don't know, but no, I'm totally fine with talking about cost. It is a thing. And yeah, you know, I think in y'all's story turned out to be somewhat complicated because it took a couple embryo transfers and a little bit of work, but definitely got there and had the right end result. And you do have a few embryos to continue to build your family if you so choose. But yeah, do you think that there were parts of the journey that were easier? Were there things that you were worried about that actually turned out not to be a problem?
I think I was worried about IVF in general, just because I had never had, you know, no surgeries, no major procedures done. So I was a little bit nervous about that. And honestly, I mean, it turned out to be no big deal in the end. I had an extreme needle phobia in the beginning, and I, you know, ended up right now, anybody can take my blood, shoot me up with whatever. It doesn't bother me because I'm used to it at this point. So I would say that it was a lot less daunting than I thought it was going to be. It was cool. a lot easier. Not saying it's easy by any means. It was very difficult. But looking back now, obviously very worth it. So I would say, and I tell this to a lot of people who are, you know, looking into IVF as an option, is it seems, you know, insanely daunting when you start out. And then when you're doing it, you just kind of, you know, you put your head into it and you just get into it and you do it. And it turns out to be not as big of a deal as I anticipated it being. I'm sure other people may have different opinions about that, but personally, that's how I felt about it.
That's what I hear the majority of the time. And when you're in the middle of it, walking that route with people, it's not always the easy thing. I remember us having several conversations on the phone or in person about some decisions that you guys had to make along the way. And those moments are tough because those decisions are important. You're right. At the end, when you have your kiddo, it's like, okay, that was pretty cool. A ton of ground. I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. Any closing remarks, or you feel like you covered your bases too?
Yeah, I feel like I covered my bases. I could talk about this for hours, and I'm sure you can too. So.
I do every day. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You do. And I probably bombarded you, while I was with you. So I can talk forever, but I think we covered all the bases.
Cool. Well, it's been my pleasure. I really appreciate you. And look forward to talking to you again soon. If anybody has any suggestions, thoughts, comments, or whatever, you can always email me podcast@fertilityanswers.com. But until next month, Caitlin, thank you again, and hope everybody has a good one. Bye.